another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org, where history proves that truth, or at least their version of it, is truly stranger than fiction. Today I'm looking at Charles Fox Parham and his relationship to William Joseph Seymour. As many of you know, and if you are unfamiliar, you can almost look through the comment feeds and see it, there are Pentecostals who believe that their faith traces all the way back to William Joseph Seymour, and there are other Pentecostals who trace it back to Parham, and obviously there's a variety of others, but Parham and Seymour were the two big ones. Those who trace it back to William Joseph Seymour claim that William Joseph Seymour was the first true apostle of the new, the new version of Pentecostalism that spread after the Azusa Street Revival. Not many people know, however, that there was a schism that occurred, and during that schism, things changed. So, depending on which side of the schism that you landed on, you either looked to Charles Fox Parham as the first apostle of the new Pentecostal movement, or you look to Seymour. The interesting part of all of this is, when you really get down to the facts, Charles Fox Parham was even the one who William Joseph Seymour claimed to be the leader of the movement, which I'll get into that history just a bit. But I'm going to make the argument a little bit stronger than I think other people have, because studying the history and all of these trails of research back to its origins, what you really find out is the New Apostolic Reformation today is just another iteration of Parhamism. And I'll describe that a bit. I know that there will be people probably already who are arguing with that the moment they heard me say this. But Charles Fox Parham is more integral to everything that you see today than anyone realizes. In fact, you could say it like this. The New Apostolic Reformation is basically Parhamite Pentecostal Restorationism. After, a century of evolution, you have the tongues becomes prophecy, the missionary urgency, you have the dominionist strategy, which, Parham didn't teach it in the way that they teach it today, but he did teach a version of this that developed. I'll say it like that. But the key is this. The apostolic faith, which is what Parham branded his movement, it was a apostolic faith movement. It became the apostolic, new apostolic reformation. And think about those names. What Parham was trying to establish was the idea that modern apostles had come to the earth, him being the chief one, obviously. Modern apostles had come to the earth to prepare the world for the end of days. Which is exactly what the New Apostolic Reformation is teaching, right? This has a history that you can trace back. The reason why Pentecostals don't is because of some of the dirty secrets of Charles Fox Parham, which we have covered in previous podcasts. So today's episode is going to be one of connecting several dots that I have already published in various forms of research, either books or on the podcast histories. You can even go to the website and read some of it in the articles, and you'll see the source material on the website on each of the respective pages. Charles Fox Parham, for example, you can see some of the things that I have covered. But today is connecting the dots, and I will be talking about many things that each statement itself is deserving of a full podcast to explain, and I've already done this in several cases. So if you want to learn more about one of those statements, you can either go back through the, through the podcast history, or you can go to the Charles Fox Parham page and just read for the research yourself. But what I'm presenting isn't really my opinion. That's the point I want to make here in all of this. It's not my opinion that this is Parhamite Christianity that has developed into the New Apostolic Reformation. It's actually a proven history. And again, I know those in the Seymour camp, they're going to say, no, it's not, John. But I want to talk through that a bit, and we will get into some of that history. So for those of you who are new to this history, I'll talk through this a bit just to give you some key milestones in history for you to go back and research. And you can, again, find it in some of the podcasts. But Charles Fox Parham was by many accounts, he is considered to be the father of modern Pentecostalism. Those Pentecostals who choose Seymour will erase Parham from that part of his history, but it's like taking away a key component of history. It would be like, in the United States, it would be like saying, we are separate from England, but I want to exclude the Revolutionary War. You just can't do it, right? It's part of the history. And the reason it's covered up is Charles Fox Parham had an affinity for young men. I'll say it like that and keep it G-rated. You can find that research on the podcast or on the website. You can find some documents. I'll talk through that a bit, and I want to warn listeners, if you have children who are listening, you probably want them not to listen to this episode, because I will be talking about Parham and his getting caught with a young man, not just one. Apparently, there were multiple, but I'm going to talk through that a bit. And I'll warn you outright, if you are a Seymourite, I don't even know how you would call this, if you're a Pentecostal person who chooses to ignore Charles Fox Parham and say that Seymour was the leader of the revival, the leader of the movement that evolved into modern Pentecostalism, and you're not willing to look through the history that has been documented, this probably is not the podcast for you, because it will be probably offensive to that category of Pentecostals. If you're a researcher and you want to see how all of this evolved and came to be, this is the podcast for you. So I'll make those disclaimers up front, but I'll talk through a bit about Charles Fox Parham first to connect some of the dots that I have mentioned in various podcasts and books and articles. And the point I want to make first is that Parham, like many New Apostolic Reformation leaders today, really liked money. And that is something that seems to be very common in the movement. Some of the examples that I have given, and you can find that research on the Parham page on the website, the biggest of which was he was one of the investors in a company that allegedly would take chemicals, and you could put it on ordinary rocks, and turn it into gold from God. As funny as that sounds, he was an investor in this. And when I first came across this, I thought he was victimized, because as an investor, there's a series of articles in the newspapers that are describing a court trial where he is branded as a victim, but he's also an investor in the company. And when I first saw this, if I was investing in a company, somebody had duped me and I invested in this thing and it could turn, you know, ordinary rocks into gold from God, and I said, no, these people tricked me, that would stand up in a non-religious court. But think of how that works inside of the religious realm. Whenever you are a speaker, imagine these conventions you go to with New Apostolic Reformation, telling people just casually in sermons, and God has given us this liquid that I can drop onto a rock and turn it into gold. You too, brother, sister, you too can have gold. He will supply all of your needs. That's usually how it's framed. And while I can't go back and listen to his statements, I can't prove that. So that's more of a historical reference to the way it's usually handled. But I will say this. If somebody is investing in this type of thing, usually as an investor, you're going to want proof. And that's really where it comes down to being an issue for me. Why would you invest into something that does something so fantastic as ordinary rocks into gold without having seen, is this actually gold? So either A, he was a very, very poor businessman and invested in something that he did not do his due diligence, or he was investing because this was a scheme that made a lot of people money. And you have to remember the era in the late 1800s, early 1900s, there were a lot of similar types of scams. So Parham was involved in a scam. Whether he was a perpetrator or a true victim, that is left open to history. But I can tell you what it looks like. And I'll just mention that this was the types of circles of people he ran with. That's the more important part here. He had a person who, on many different attempts, tried to do things outlandish in the name of religion to make money. And he is connected to people who are doing similar things, which I'll get into that in a bit. It looks very bad for him as the leader of this apostolic movement. I'll say it like that. Now, does that mean everybody in the movement's like this? No. Does it mean Seymour is like this? No, not necessarily. But in the circle of people who are connected to them, you have this type of person. That's the point I want to first establish. The second point is that he also looked at others who were doing very, very large religious scams to attract people, to give them all of their life savings. Not just one, but he visited Frank Sanford's commune. And Frank Sanford, if you haven't studied that history, he's an infamous cult leader from Maine who convinced all of his followers to give them basically their life's inheritance, their life's fortunes, to become part of this movement that would spread the end of days revival theme to the world, and went doing spiritual warfare all across the world in two boats, one of which sank, and it turned into a catastrophe. That's one of the compounds, though, that he visited in Maine. He also visited John Alexander Dowie's sect and eventually tried to take over the commune, Dowie being the largest of all of the religious faith healer con men known to man. If you want to learn more about Dowie, I've written a book, Weaponized Religion, from Weaponized Religion, A Critical Examination of John Alexander Dowie. And I talk through all of that history. But Parham was connected to these types of people. He was going specifically after those that were making lots of money. And at the same time, he was coming up with smaller schemes, such as claiming to have divinely figured out where the Ark of the Covenant is. And he was having people donate money into his organization so that he could go find this alleged Ark of the Covenant that he had spiritually discerned. Obviously, he never found it, and there were a lot of people upset. I think in the aftermath of all of this, I think he got mugged outside of Chicago because somebody was just so upset. Whether he was a victim or a perpetrator, he got a lot of money from a lot of people. Charles Fox Parham did. So this is the founder of modern Pentecostalism. And again, that does not brand the whole movement like this, but that is the person who founded it. He started to create from just his simple compound in Topeka, Kansas, he started to create it as a movement that people would grow and develop into more apostolic-minded people. In other words, people who believe that the modern apostles were coming to the earth. And this was the end of days. He was preaching an end-of-days type theology, much like you see in the New Apostolic Reformation today. And he started a movement that was called the Apostolic Faith. So now connect all of those dots out to the New Apostolic Reformation. It's both the same thing. We're bringing modern apostles. It's apostolic faith. And look at the people who he is connected to who are quote-unquote God's generals in the New Apostolic Reformation. John G. Lake was one of the biggest names who Parham had attracted as a Parhamite. He attracted John G. Lake out of Zion City, connected to John Alexander Dowie. And Parham is creating the Apostolic Faith Movement in the United States. John G. Lake creates Apostolic Faith Missions in Africa. So they're both projecting the same type of apostolic faith religion, and they're both in the same sect. Parham was the leader of the sect. John G. Lake was a member of the sect. So in the hierarchy, it would be Charles Fox Parham was the apostle. John G. Lake was a follower who eventually became, I guess, another apostle. I don't know what his term would have been deemed, but at that time, it was a pyramid with Charles Fox Parham at the top. Now connect those dots to the New Order of Latter Rain, is what they eventually called it. You had F.F. Bosworth, who was also a Parhamite. So in Zion City, F.F. Bosworth was John Alexander Dowie's leader of music ministry, and he was a leader of music and playing I think it was the trumpet in the Latter Rain revivals. He mentored William Branham in how to do these faith healing revivals, and you can find pictures online of F.F. Bosworth and William Branham. F.F. Bosworth was also a Parhamite, and the way that all of that came to be, which we've talked about a few times, whenever John Alexander Dowie's fortune was widely published throughout all of the United States, John Alexander Dowie became known as the richest man in the West due to his faith healing homes, which is another, if you're a Bethel follower, you're familiar with that term, faith healing homes. That's what he had in Zion City. People were coming, giving their life's possessions to enter into a healing home, and healing homes developed from healing rooms in a hotel to actual homes to eventually Zion City had this, I guess it was kind of a makeshift hospital type thing there in Zion City. People would donate their life savings to come be healed. They would enter into the homes, and sadly, a large number of them died of their diseases and were kept, they were swept out from under the public's eye at night with the undertaker's carriage coming and taking them away. So John Alexander Dowie had this massive empire, tens of millions of dollars flowing through it. I think he had amassed in assets, I think it was around $10,000 in just 10 years. And in today's money, he had amassed about $500 million worth of money. And that was widely published throughout the United States. And then shortly after, it was published that he was losing his mental faculties, which is devastating for a faith healer, right? So the newspapers reported that Zion City was suddenly flooded with prophets who were coming to take over Zion City's operations. John Dowie presented himself as Elijah to the people. He said he was the fulfillment of Malachi 4, that Elijah was referring to his ministry, and he was the first modern apostle, John Alexander Dowie was. So when all of these prophets came into Zion City and they wanted to take over his empire, Charles Fox Parham being one of them, they were coming to be the second apostle to Dowie. And you can find, there's one newspaper article that describes how Charles Fox Parham believed that he was another iteration of this Elijah. So if you think biblically, he would have been the Elisha to John Alexander Dowie's Elijah, and he would have been the second apostle. So in the chain of command, if you think Dowie until his throne was overturned, Parham, and then transferred to William Joseph Seymour, that would make Seymour actually the third apostle, not even the first, which is kind of funny if you think about it. John G. Lake, F.F. Bosworth, and a few others, there's a photograph that you can see the heads of this, which ironically includes William Joseph Seymour in the photograph, which I'll put on the screen. They formed what was called the Parhamite sect inside of Zion City, excluding William Joseph Seymour, of course, and they started the early forms of what is later evolved into this deliverance ministry that the New Apostolic Reformation and large parts of the Charismatic movement uphold. It was the idea that not only does God heal in the manner in which the Bible claims, you pray to God for your healing and you have faith, and by faith you can be healed. Their form of deliverance movement was such that if I'm a deliverance minister, I can forcibly heal because the power of healing is inside of me as one of these modern apostles. Again, this is the apostolic faith movement. So as an apostle, I can lay hands on the sick, I can pray for them, I can cast out the demon myself. That's what they were teaching. And they were killing people. You can go look on the website. I've got, I think her name is Letitia Kruger. You can go look up, one of their victims. But they believe that an arthritic woman could be healed if they were to cast out the demons by actually straightening and snapping her bones. And the severe, intense pain of the snapping actually killed the woman. So the very earliest form of deliverance ministry that existed, A, existed from a Parhamite, B, was connected to John G. Lake, one of the apostles of the New Apostolic Reformation, C was part of the apostolic faith movement. D was in such a way that the men and women who claimed to be the so-called apostles were forcibly trying to cast out demons instead of just praying the prayer of faith and believing in the person's healing and accepting it if they didn't get healed. They, rather than accept it, they actually killed people. So that's kind of bad. But that's how this developed. This all developed in Zion City, Illinois, with Charles Fox Parham as the leader and the names that I've mentioned as part of his sect. So this is kind of a big deal. So if you look at this, and I'll give you a summary overview of all of this history, the New Apostolic Reformation is not new. It's basically just old Parhamite Restorationism, but rebranded and in a very entertaining style gospel, recreated to be more appealing to today's modern public. But it's just a century of the same religious operation that has been going on throughout time, different takes and different twists on the Parhamite religion, and it has been rebranded in various ways. It began in the 1900s with Charles Fox Parham as the founder of the Apostolic Faith Movement. He taught that Pentecost had been restored. The Pentecost that was described in the Bible had been restored in the last days, and he had developed it through a series of deep devotion and training in Topeka, Kansas, with his sect. He had developed the speaking in tongues, and the speaking in tongues was the evidence of the Holy Spirit. Key things to understand about that version, that iteration of the Parhamite religion, is that he believed in the end time harvest and the worldwide missionary commission. In fact, the speaking in tongues within his sect was key and integral to spreading the end of days revival to the world, and that would usher in the return of Jesus Christ. What happened next was Azusa Street, William Joseph Seymour, who trained under Parham, who was with Parham in Houston, Texas, whenever he was called to go out to Azusa Street, as I've covered in the past few podcasts. He held the Azusa Street revival, but he inherited the Parhamite teachings, such as the apostolic faith, the Pentecostal tongues, the full gospel, the last day's mission, the divine power, all of it. William Joseph Seymour was adapting what Parham had taught to a people in Los Angeles that broke out in revival, and he himself, which I'll get into this in a bit, he himself declared that Charles Fox Parham was the father of the movement. And I think that is the part that is overlooked by most Pentecostal historians who favor Seymour as the leader. Seymour himself declared Charles Fox Parham was that leader. After that version of Pentecostal had died out, you had the healing revival, which began in the early 1910s through the 1940s. This was the old school healing revivalist who went around teaching signs and wonders that would be proof for the public to believe that the faith healing miracles and the crowds and the altar calls was bringing down heaven in their midst. And this birthed the tent revivalist, eventually it birthed the celebrity model, which is used today in the New Apostolic Reformation. They were claiming that if you come to these tents and you see these revivalists, these healing evangelists, you are seeing somebody who is endued with the power of God, as some of them modern apostles, some prophets. Some of them did not take the designation, but they were acting and behaving much the same way. That eventually led to the healing revivals that broke out into the latter rain style healing revivals. William Branham in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, he was the foremost leader of the post-World War II healing revival. And he was teaching exactly what Parham taught. And again, he's being mentored by a Parhamite, F.F. Bosworth, but he's teaching the prophet-healer model. He's teaching the new revelation, the visions. He added to this the angelic appearances, something that I don't know that Parham actually did, but he added this and other supernatural signs. But essentially, what he was doing was the same. He was trying to find ways to affirm that he was a messenger. though he didn't call himself an apostle in the movement, he called himself a prophet. He was giving himself the same designation that Charles Fox Parham did. And interestingly, as Parham was the Elisha to John Alexander Dowie's Elijah, William Branham also claimed to have an Elijah ministry. And still today, there are people around the globe that believe that William Branham was the Elijah of this day. They just don't realize that before Branham, you had the Charles Fox Parham Elijah, and before Parham, you had the John Alexander Dowie Elijah. And if you went back far enough, you could go to Frank Sanford, who Charles Fox Parham studied, and you could find the Frank Sanford Elijah as well. There's just so many reiterations of this Elijah theme. But with Branham and his post-World War II healing revivals, he also carried over into the Latter Rain revivals, because for a period of time, the Latter Rain movement merged with the post-World War II healing revival movement, and big names were traveling along both sides of the fence, such as Oral Roberts, who worked with Branham. Many people who birthed the Latter Rain movement had worked together and coordinated these big revival meetings where you'd have multiple ministers on the platform, and they were presenting themselves as apostles and prophets in the movement. So Latter Rain basically took Charles Fox Parham's prophet healer model that he had developed from Frank Sanford and John Alexander Dowie, and it mixed with it this idea of the manifested sons of God, which is developed building off of that same Elijah theology. So he was teaching an end time glory, you had the new wine, you had the new move. It was a new level of Parhamite, but at its core, it was teaching the principles of the old Parhamite restorationism. And this basically developed what would become the prophetic networks from the 1980s through the 2000s. You had the Vineyard Movement, you had the Kansas City Fellowship, Kansas City Prophets, you had the Shepherding Movement, each of which, if you trace its roots, you can find Branham in those roots. But it's essentially just basically Parhamite restorationism rebranded and adapting all of the changes along the way. So you had the relational networks, you had the apostolic covering, the dreams, the spiritual words, spiritual warfare, the territorial assignment, which is interesting because I don't know that Parham himself did this, but he did visit Frank Sanford, which was doing this type of territorial spiritual warfare. He was taking those two ships up to the shores. Sometimes he did not even go up to the shores, and he would preach at a nation, trying to cast out the demons and prepare it for the end of days. So he was doing a very early version of this, but this was preparing for eventually what would develop into the New Apostolic Reformation with this kingdom influence. And that influence came from various figures, from John Wimber to others. And I know that the John Wimber crowd will say, well, his teachings on the coming kingdom was quite different than the New Apostolic Reformation. Yes and no. If you follow his teachings all the way back, you find that it also has trace elements of what Parham taught within his religion. So it was just Parhamite religion, Parhamite restorationism, with just a slight twist on it. It still had the experiences. It still had these power figures. You know, the fact that we're even mentioning central figures of the movement tells you it's much like Parham had. It's just a different, different language, different methods, but same DNA. And from the 2000s to the present, it developed into the New Apostolic Reformation. C. Peter Wagner, he was not the father of the NAR, but he coined the term. When he coined the term, he was basically, by his own words, describing something that had already existed. So with it, each iteration of this, it's something that pre-existed, and you can trace those roots all the way back to Charles Fox Parham.
Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the Latter Rain, Charismatic, and other fringe movements into the New Apostolic Reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support.
I have for some time been exploring the cover-up culture that exists in the New Apostolic Reformation and showing people that it has pre-existed the NAR by a long time. You can go back through the charismatic movements, basically through every iteration, all the way back to early Pentecostalism. And Charles Fox Parham, as the founder of the movement, was no exception to this cover-up culture in the way that the movement has eventually covered it up. The very fact that people say that all of our history traces back to Seymour is pure evidence of the cover-up culture. And I promised that I would be getting to this, so I'm going to. I also promised you, if you have kids, don't have them listening, because this is going to cover some very sensitive subject matter. But Charles Fox Parham, as I mentioned, had affections for young men. And also, according to the newspapers, according to the parents who were testifying in the court trial between Charles Fox Parham and several people in Texas, apparently, according to the parents, that problem existed as well with their children. So we're not talking about one single person. We're not talking about one single instance. We're talking about a history of crimes. Charles Fox Parham was able to escape because he was able to defend himself, saying, "I can't help what I did in my sleep." That was the entire argument. He did not deny that he did the thing. He did not say that they're wrong. These are false accusations. He said, "Yeah, I did it, but I was asleep. I can't help it that I did this thing," which is really bad if you think about it. That was the founder of the Apostolic Faith movement. However, the Azusa Street Revival broke out before that happened. The Azusa Street Revival was in 1906, and whenever Charles Fox Parham was arrested, it was in, I think, July 1907. So you're talking about a full year between these events happening. During that first year, Charles Fox Parham, as the founder of the Apostolic Faith movement, was the leader of those who declared the Apostolic Faith. And William Joseph Seymour was one of these people. In fact, if you go historically and look through some of the publications, the names, the books, the way that they're talking, they're all talking about Charles Fox Parham's movement. The very first publication that came out of Azusa Street was a publication called The Apostolic Faith. And I'll throw it up on the screen so you can read through it, but it says, "Pentecost has come, Los Angeles being visited by a revival of Bible salvation and Pentecost as recorded in the book of Acts." And it goes through all of this. It talks about William Joseph Seymour's call to the ministry. And he's talking about the divine call that came to him in Houston, Texas. In fact, it says, "It was the divine call that brought me from Houston, Texas to Los Angeles." He was in Houston, Texas with Charles Fox Parham. So there are multiple different avenues to take this all the way back to Charles Fox Parham. But the key statement, if you read the second page of the very first issue, Volume 1, Number 1, 1906 of the Apostolic Faith magazine, they published a letter from Brother Parham, is how they declared it. The title is "A Letter from Brother Parham." And it says, "Brother Charles Fox Parham, listen to this, who is God's leader in the Apostolic Faith movement, writes from Kansas. And he expects, Lord willing, to be in Los Angeles September 15th. So in September, he was supposed to come to the Azusa Street Revival. He was supposed to be working with William Joseph Seymour. And the letter, the newsletter, which was published by William Joseph Seymour and others who were in the Apostolic Faith missions, and the newsletter published from Los Angeles, California, from the Azusa Street Mission, as I understand it, was publishing this Azusa Street Revival but also the apostolic faith. In fact, that's right there in the name. You have Charles Fox Parham's Apostolic Faith Movement. You have the Revival's publication, The Apostolic Faith. And in the letter, it's calling Charles Fox Parham God's leader in the Apostolic Faith Movement. So all of these come together to show you that Charles Fox Parham was the leader. And in the letter, he writes from Kansas, he says he expects, Lord willing, to be in Los Angeles, September 15th, hearing that Pentecost has come to Los Angeles, he writes, and I quote, "I rejoice in God over you, my children." So Charles Fox Parham is declaring that this is his children. It's his movement. It's named after his movement. The publication is named after his movement. There are so many signs pointing to Charles Fox Parham as the leader of this movement. And again, this is 1906. It's not until 1907, whenever it really hits the fan, that Charles Fox Parham is not the leader that we think he is. So there is a point in time in which Charles Fox Parham is the apostle of the movement. And William Joseph Seymour, while he has rank, he's the one who led the revival, he would be a subordinate to the apostle in the movement. He was one of the children mentioned, right? Charles Fox Parham being the father of the movement. So by all accounts, Charles Fox Parham was the father of the movement, even by Azusa Street themselves. And William Joseph Seymour had his hand in this publication, so you can see that there was no question whether Parham was the guy. I'll just say it like that. It is describing his movement coming to the sudden revival that's going to sweep across the United States. Parham just didn't know that he was going to get caught, and that's really the key here. Had he not been caught, you would be hearing more about Parham than you do Seymour, because as the founder of the movement, as the key apostle in the movement, he was your guy, but he got dethroned. And that's really the key to understand here. His dethroning changed things somewhat. So it created the first schism in 1907, and you had those who decided, we want no part of Charles Fox Parham. We want to go with Seymour. He's our leader. Let's lift him up. But you also had those who were Parhamites, and they were true dedicated Parhamites. John G. Lake, F.F. Bosworth, these types of figures were Parhamites, and they continued with the Parhamite side, even though they intermingled with the Seymour side. But they continued, like John G. Lake continued the apostolic faith missions. He was spreading Parhamism and his iteration, his version of Parhamism. All of this comes to a head because Charles Fox Parham, after his restoration, which is another theme that you see in the modern New Apostolic Reformation, he had his fall, he felt a sin. It was egregious sin. It was horrific what he did. Should have never been restored, but he is restored. And there's a key individual who claims that he was saved by Charles Fox Parham. And that man was Gordon Lindsay, who is the founder of Christ for the Nations Institute, which trains many of these modern NAR apostles, many of these charismatics, who helps the global networking, who was also one of the key publicists for William Branham's magazine, which was called Voice of Healing Magazine. He's the one who eventually took over the magazine, started the Voice of Healing conventions that merged with the Latter Rain movement, and literally birthed all of the apostolic faith networks, which again is named after the apostolic faith that Charles Fox Parham had taught. Lindsay was instrumental in this. By Gordon Lindsay's own testimony, he was saved in one of Charles Fox Parham's meetings. So you start connecting these dots. You've got Gordon Lindsay and all of his apostolic networks. He is later working with John G. Lake, who was a Parhamite. Lake and Gordon Lindsay were spreading the Assemblies of God denomination all throughout the South. They were touring together, spreading the apostolic faith in the form of the Assemblies of God. And all of these connections start to come together. You see Parham's branding on practically everything that exists in the history of this movement. And for those who might still question whether Seymour was the leader or Parham was the leader. Right under the letter from Charles Fox Parham in the very first issue of the Apostolic Faith magazine, there's a column entitled The Old Time Pentecost. And here's what it says. This work began about 5 years ago last January when a company of people under the leadership of Charles Parham were studying God's Word, tarried for Pentecost in Topeka, Kansas. After searching through the country everywhere, they've been unable to find any Christians that had the true Pentecostal power. So they laid aside all commentaries and notes and waited on the Lord, studying His Word, and what they did not understand, they got down before the bench and asked God to have wrought their hearts by the Holy Ghost. They had a prayer tower from which prayers ascended night and day to God. Think IHOP KC. Think the 24/7 prayer and fasting. This was something that Charles Fox Parham did in Topeka, Kansas. After 3 months, a sister who had been teaching sanctification for the baptism with the Holy Ghost, one who had a sweet, loving experience and all carnality taken out of her heart, felt the Lord to lead her to have hands laid on her to receive Pentecost. So when they prayed, the Holy Ghost came in great power and she commenced speaking in an unknown tongue. And I've mentioned before, you can go find it in the webpage or in the previous podcast, before the speaking in tongues, they had the writing in tongues. So this is a strategy that they were trying to develop. They eventually did develop. And Charles Fox Parham's original intent was actually more biblical than what later developed. Parham truly believed that if he could get these people to the state of Pentecost, where they're speaking in unknown languages, those unknown languages would be able to be heard and understood by the missionaries as they went around the globe to convert other people and other religions, other continents, convert them to the apostolic faith. So one of the early Pentecostal experiences was he sent these missionaries out to, I think it was China. They tried to speak and convert them to Christianity in China, and failed miserably because nobody could understand what they said. So they finally came back, and that was one of the failed missions. But he believed that, like in the Bible times, like whenever the people were speaking in the unknown tongues and people were hearing them in their own languages, he thought that he had done this, when in fact he had not. That's not how speaking in tongues developed. Later, it evolved into an unknown tongue that nobody can understand. And so it kind of strayed a little bit from what the Bible taught, a lot, if you think about it. But the original apostolic faith that was spreading was that eventually people would be able to hear the unknown languages, and the mission was to spread it around the globe. Charles Fox Parham was going to be the kingpin of a denomination that was global. So you think billion soul harvest. Charles Fox Parham is really the instigator of all of that type of theology. He believed that his version of the apostolic faith would do it. And in the letter from the people who were there at the Azusa Street Revival right there in 1906, declared that the work that they're doing now began with Charles Fox Parham. So there is no question, at 1906, Charles Fox Parham was the leader. The other key point that I want to mention, and this is overlooked by every single Pentecostal historian that I've encountered, you will not find this in a Pentecostal history book. Pentecostalism, modern Pentecostalism, traces its roots all the way back to the Azusa Street Revival because that schism that separated Parham from William Joseph Seymour put William Joseph Seymour at the top of a new movement. They said this is a new movement that did not exist. Ignoring this first publication from the Azusa Street Mission, but they overlook something that is really critical. Charles Fox Parham pre-existed the Azusa Street by quite a bit, and the movement had already spread. So this wasn't anything new. Speaking in tongues wasn't anything new. And in fact, in the Old Time Pentecost article, it says this. Now, after 5 years, something like 13,000 people have received this gospel. It's referring to the apostolic faith that Charles Fox Parham was the father of.
13,000 people have received this gospel. It is spreading everywhere until churches who do not believe backslide and lose the experience they have. That's a really critical statement, because that is one of the key elements of what exists in today's modern New Apostolic Reformation. You either accept what we believe or you're backslidden. You're out. Your church is no good. That is literally what they're saying right here in the first issue. Those who are older in this movement are stronger, and greater signs and wonders are following them. It's another key that it existed in every iteration of the Parmite religion, from the post-World War II healing revivals and latter rain, all the way through the charismatic movement, all the way to today's New Apostolic Reformation. The greater the signs and wonders, the greater you are in the movement. That was what they were pushing right here from the Azusa Street Revival. And again, they're saying it predated about 5 years ago. And the movement has taken a stronghold with thousands of people in it. So it's not that just this Azusa Street Revival has birthed the movement. It's that this is a revival that is because of the movement. This is a revival in dedication to Charles Fox Parham and his movement. And then it goes on to describe in the article, it talks about how these meetings just started as this little thing in this cottage meeting. But the Azusa Street Revival was literally being declared as something that existed because Charles Fox Parham began this work 5 years ago. And the last point I want to make is one that raises the most questions for me. Because when you think of culture of cover-up, and you think of the very first schisms that happen in Pentecostalism, so much so that Charles Fox Parham is forgotten as the father of the movement, even though the early fathers of the later fathers of the movement openly declared him to be the spiritual father, there is some history that gets really, really questionable for me. So I've been going through, this is the first issue of the Apostolic Faith magazine published from the Azusa Street Mission. It is branded Volume 1, Issue 1. And we know this only because that is how the history has been preserved. I don't have an actual copy of this. I don't know if it was even published with Volume 1 on the page, but that's the way it's presented to the public. In other words, this is the very first magazine that came out of the Azusa Street Revival. It's declaring Seymour as the leader of the revival, but it's also declaring Charles Fox Parham as the father of the movement. It's a publication called The Apostolic Faith, which is the branding, the terminology, the marketing that Charles Fox Parham was using. But listen to this. If you keep on reading in the first issue, the alleged first issue, there's an article called Tongues Convict Sinners. In the very first sentence, it says, "We clip the following from The Apostolic Faith published by Charles Fox Parham at Baxter, Kansas." That's another part that many people overlook. Charles Fox Parham published a magazine called The Apostolic Faith, and the very first issue of The Apostolic Faith is publishing a quote from The Apostolic Faith. You can't make this stuff up. It is my opinion that this is not the first issue. I look at this and I see this as a continuation. Even if they did print it as Volume 1, Issue 1, it would be Volume 1, Issue 1 that is printed from Los Angeles and not Kansas. They both have the name, The Apostolic Faith. They are both The Apostolic Faith magazine, both of them. Charles Fox Parham, William Joseph Seymour. Parham is the spiritual father, declared by Volume 1, Issue 1, if you believe that title, Volume 1, Issue 1. And Charles Fox Parham is talking about, in this article, a remarkable incident of God's searching power was recorded in Melrose, Kansas, during a revival which has been held by some of our young people at that place. The power of the Holy Spirit was greatly manifested in the meetings by speaking in unknown tongues. So you've got the Azusa Street Revival that all the Pentecostals say this is where the tongues broke out, and that William Joseph Seymour led, and he therefore published the Apostolic Faith magazine. But the very first issue is talking about revival that broke out with speaking in tongues by Parham. So which is the first? Who's on first? That's the question I have. The reason why that we think that it came from the Azusa Street Revival was because that is how the historians have twisted the facts and eliminated a lot of history. You can only make that conclusion if you erase large portions of history. And I'm talking significant because this is the very first issue of the Apostolic Faith coming out of the Azusa Street Mission. Every single thing that I have said here in this podcast is not my opinion. It is coming directly from the writings of William Joseph Seymour and others who are publishing this from the Apostolic Faith, the magazine that is also the name of Charles Fox Parham's magazine. You can't make this stuff up. The only way this type of thing can exist is because of cover-up culture. What happened is, 1906, the revival broke out. It was another revival of speaking in tongues. Parham had already had this. Once Parham fell from grace, the very next year, 1907, key people got together and they said, what do we do with this? Parham is our spiritual father. He's the one who named our movement. He's the one who our magazine has published after or even coordinated with. I don't even know. We don't know because that history has been erased. This was a Parhamite movement that was birthed in Los Angeles, and it was not the first. And the last point that I'll make, which is a summary of all of this, is this. Parham was to come to the Azusa Street Revival. Think of this. Speaking in tongues had broke out. William Joseph Seymour had contacted Parham. We have that information, that letter's published. Seymour contacted Parham that his baby, the speaking in tongues, had just came to fruition. Parham, if this was true, if this was the very first iteration of this, Parham would have dropped everything. He had been trying so hard to get people to speak in tongues into a revival scene. But he had already had a revival where this happened. And it's mentioned right here in the magazine. So therefore, it was not as significant. He says, Lord willing, I may come to this, but I'm already holding these other meetings where speaking in tongues is happening right here in Kansas. I don't really need to come this. You're doing a fine job, William Joseph Seymour. But when he fell from grace, everything changed. The leader of the Azusa Street Mission was declared to be Seymour. The Azusa Street Revival was declared to be Seymour, I should say. And he is the one who became the face of the movement. So now when you think of the Azusa Street Revival, you don't think of Parham, who's the father of the movement. You think of Seymour. So hopefully, by showing all of this information, I've helped people to connect all of the dots that I have been doing for so long. I've been doing this for about 10 years, going through different trails of Pentecostal histories, starting from, usually I started with Branhamism and those working with Branham, which included Gordon Lindsay, F.F. Bosworth, tracing all of those trails back to the epicenter, which was the Azusa Street Revival. But the problem was that wasn't the epicenter. And I kept hitting that roadblock. How can I say that the Azusa Street Revival is the epicenter for modern Pentecostalism when it was just another one of the revivals that was happening? It was, yes, the one who openly got, you know, published across the nation that this weird thing's happening in Los Angeles. It got the most hype. It got the most fame. And because of the hype and the fame that exists in the Pentecostal charismatic movement, that took precedence over the history. And for me, as a historian, that is a problem. Whenever something is over-glorified for the sake of entertainment, you know, literally people opening their magazine, their newspapers in the mornings reading, oh, this strange thing's happening out in Azusa Street, they're not going to think, oh, this strange thing has already happened in Kansas. So there is a problem, and that is a big problem for me. So I began this research. I was trying to find the epicenter, and I found that it's much different than people picture. While you would like to have this straight line back to Azusa Street, like everything else, it's like a splatter gun. There's this splatter gun that goes off, and there's all of these different key pieces of the puzzle, each of them kind of interconnected, but none of them quite accurately portrayed by historians. And not by any ill intent, Many historians just aren't aware of all of the facts because the people involved with the early revivals, they made a conscious decision. Parham's out. Parham did this thing that is horrific. He's out. We need a new face of the movement. Seymour led the revival. Let's say that this is the first. Let's ignore everything that Parham's doing. This is the first. We're it. We're the big ones. This is modern Pentecostalism. So if you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.